I know. I realize that this movie is actually quite old now, but in 1994 there was this comedy movie that came out and became pretty much a cult classic. Maybe some of you might notice, maybe recognize the name. It's called Dumb and Dumber. All right, so Jim Carrey plays this character named Lloyd Christmas. He's a good nature, but not very smart limo driver. All right, so he ends up falling in love with this girl that he drives to the airport, and then sees that she forgets her briefcase at the airport. Then him and his best friend Harry travels from Providence, Rhode Island, all the way to Aspen to try to deliver this briefcase to her. And so near the end of the movie, he actually makes it all the way there and catches up with her. Her name is Mary, this girl. And so he drove to the airport, and then he's there and he confesses, you know, his love to her and asks her, "So, what are the chances for a guy like you and a girl like me," I told you he's not very smart, right, "ending up together?" And then she replies, "Not good." And he goes, "1 in 100? She goes, "More like 1 in 1,000,000. And it gets really quiet, and you might feel like this guy's crushed. And then he gets this huge smile on his face and he goes, "So you're telling me there's a chance?" Yeah! And she's looking at him like, "You're crazy, dude," right? And here we are in Isaiah, and God is here trying to tell Judah, putting your hope, putting your trust in anyone but me just leads to failure. But it's like they're not getting it, right? It's like God's trying to tell them, "Your success rate is 1 in 1,000,000. And they're going, "Well, sounds pretty good. We'll go that way." And so we've been going through these oracles that that Isaiah is writing through Yahweh, telling Isaiah about these oracles. And so he's like, "This is what's going to be happening. This is what's going on." And these oracles are addressing different nations surrounding Judah. And the kind of purpose for this is it may be for those countries, but it really is for Judah to read. As they're kind of seeing how God is trying to explain to them, this is what it's looking like for the countries around you. And so this morning, we are going to be looking at Babylon again, like part two. We talked about Babylon earlier. And the main idea, like the big picture that I want us to see this morning, is that God is trying to, through this passage, God is trying to call us to abandon our hopeless situations for His hopeful solution. God is trying to calling us to abandon our hopeless situations for His hopeful solution. And so I wanted to find hope. And as you can see behind me, hope, I want to define it as a feeling of expectation or desire for a certain thing to happen. It's a hope and expectation. It's an expectation and a desire for a certain thing to happen. And so this morning I want us to look at three hopeless situations that is being painted here in this oracle. Three hopeless situations, and how these hopeless situations actually we find ourselves in oftentimes. We might think that we won't, but hopefully you'll be able to see this morning that this actually applies to our lives and how we see God and how we interact with Him and how He's calling us to abandon our hopeless situations for His hopeful solution. So, we're in Isaiah chapter 21. And let me read from verse 1. It says, "The oracle concerning the wilderness of the sea, as whirlwinds of the Negev sweep on and come from the wilderness, from a terrible land. A stern vision is told to me, Isaiah, the traitor betrays, and the destroyer destroys. Go up to O Elam, lay siege, O Media, Medea. All the sighing she has caused, I bring to an end. Therefore, my loins are filled with anguish. Pain has seized me, like pains of a woman in labor. I am bowed down so that I cannot hear. I am dismayed so that I cannot see. My heart staggers. Horror has appalled me. The twilight I long for has been turned for me into trembling. They prepare the table. They spread the rice. They eat. They drink. Arise, O princess. Oil the shield. For thus the Lord said to me, go set a watchman. Let him announce what he sees. When he sees riders, horsemen in pairs, riders on donkeys, riders on camels, let him listen diligently. Then he who saw cried out, upon a watchtower I stand, O Lord, continually by day, and at my post I am stationed whole nights. And behold, here comes riders, horsemen in pairs. And he answered, fallen, fallen is Babylon, and all the carved images of her gods he has shattered to the ground. O my threshed and winnowed ones, what I have heard from the Lord of hosts, the God of Israel, I announce to you. All right, let me kind of, like, speaking a lot of words, and we're like, I don't know what you're saying. Like, just, you know, like, he's painting this picture, and sometimes we're like, I don't understand the painting. So let me kind of, like, go back, and we'll walk through this real quick, and let me show you what's going on. So he's talking about Babylon. Right off the bat, he says, it's the oracle considering the wilderness of the sea or the desert of the sea. And what is going on is, if the desert really provides no, it doesn't really provide a lot, right? It leaves no hope. You can't do anything. There's no food in the desert. There's no water in the desert. It's a pretty hopeless situation if you find yourself stranded in the desert. But on the flip side, if you're stranded on sea, it's no better. You're surrounded by water, but there's no water to drink, right? Water, water everywhere, not a drop to drink because we can't drink salt water. And what God is trying to paint here is going, Babylon is this place, a wilderness of the sea. There's absolutely no hope. It's like a double whammy. It reminds me of my intramural basketball team that we had in college. We called ourselves slow but weak. Right? Slow but weak. We're slow, but we're also very weak. And it's giving this double whammy going, this place is like a wilderness, but it's also like a sea. Offers no hope either way. And it's just like this showing like Babylon is like this sinking ship and is going down. It just gives this feeling and expectation of like it's a hopeless situation. And then it starts showing that there's this, he goes, this vision is shown to Isaiah. That there's this political turmoil. People are like stabbing each other in the back. And just like, and then he goes from verse 3 to verse 4. This is Isaiah talking. Goes, God shows him this vision of what's going to happen. He goes, it is terrifying. So from verse 3 to verse 4, he's going, this is a terrifying vision. I don't even want to look at it. And then he goes on to kind of explain what's going on. And in verse 5, when he says, they prepare the table, they spread the rugs, they eat, they drink. It's like God's giving them this glimpse of Judah making alliances with the countries around them. And they're celebrating this political alliance. So they're eating and they're drinking and they're celebrating like, all right, he's painting this picture. This is what's going to happen if Judah places their trust and their hope in themselves and how they can manipulate the situation, and if they place their hope and trust with these alliances, like with Babylon. And so the Lord says, I want you to set a watchman, which is just Isaiah himself. He's just speaking in more metaphorical terms. He goes, you know, pretend you're looking out. What do you see? And he goes, when you start seeing pretty much acts of war that's going to happen, which is the riders, the horsemen, the riders on donkeys and camels, this is kind of like the act of war. This is, you know, report it. And then he sees it. He goes, here I see that it's coming. And Babylon's going to fall. And that's going to, I mean, that's the first oracle we see. And he goes, Babylon's just going to fall. And so the first hopeless situation that we see in this oracle is that your best plans, your ways, will not save you. You see, Judah thinks that maybe my plans, my ways, this might work. And this is what Isaiah is trying to warn them. Don't trust yourselves. Don't trust your plans. Don't trust your ways. Don't think that you can save yourself. It's not going to work. Don't put your trust in how you can kind of like, you know, don't put your trust in the alliances that you make and how you can manipulate the situation or what you can do. You know, Babylon is a sinking ship. Your plans, your ways will not save you because you need to trust in my plans. That's the flip side of what he's trying to explain to them and to us. So I think a lot of us here, if you had any sort of a pulse this last month, you know that the Powerball was like this news that was like, it was just like all over the news, right? It like reached crazy mammoth proportions. Like it was like what, over $1 billion or something like that. And it was just like this gigantic amount of wealth that you can possibly win, right? So anybody and everybody is like buying these Powerball tickets. This is kind of like, I get it, it's like 1 in 214 million or whatever like that. But, you know, what the heck? No big deal. Let's just, you know, just kind of throw your hat in the ring. And so for most people, maybe you'll go, like, you'll buy a ticket or two, just like, oh, well, let's see what happens, right? But if you notice, like, all the stories that come after it, there's apparently this one lady. Now, we don't know if it's true or not, because who knows, right? But this one lady starts a GoFundMe after the Powerball. And she says, essentially, in this GoFundMe is this website where you can ask people to fund you on various things, right? Like, you can, you know, just whatever it may be, you can be like, I want to sell this thing, so, if you know, I'm raising support, or I want to make potato salad, so you want to fund my potato salad, go ahead, right? All these random things, right? But so this lady's like, I want you to fund me because I spent all my money buying Powerball tickets with the anticipation that I was going to win the Powerball. But I didn't. So now I'm dead broke. And I would love it if you would just kind of help me get me back on my feet again so I can buy more tickets later, right? And so it gets shut down, but before it gets shut down, it makes it to the news, right? They're going, and then it's easy for us, and for people who are reading, like, are you crazy? Are you insane? How can you go and just, like, spend all your money to buy Powerball tickets thinking you're going to win? I mean, that's absolutely crazy. And so it's probably easy for us sitting here this morning going, I'm pretty sure I'm not going to empty my bank account on the hopes and whims that I win the lottery. But in some sense, we do that in other ways. We have hopes and desires, and we think that maybe I can empty out my life and put it all on there in hopes that I make it big. And it's this idea of what is your desires or expectations for the future, and what are you kind of throwing your life in, hoping that you hit the big one? What do you invest your time and effort in? What do you think will give you great hope? Judah over here goes, the temptation here is, I'm going to throw all my hope behind this alliance with Babylon, going, I'm hoping this works out. This is my plan. I'm going to throw my alliance with Babylon, and we're going to attack Assyria. This is this country that's kind of like, you know, that's been trying to subdue us. I'm going to kind of throw my alliance with them in hopes that it'll save me. This lady goes, I'm going to throw all my money in Powerballs in hopes that I make it big, that it'll save me. And so maybe for some of us, we don't do things like that, but we do it in other ways. I'll point out three ways. For the first one, whether you are a parent, a student, or been a student, it's easy for us, especially in our typical Asian culture, to throw our hope in education. And you kind of just pour all that out in education, right? Getting the good grades means you get into the good school. Getting to the good school, you get good grades again, means you get a good job. If you get a good job, means you get paid and you get money. And life will be good. People will respect you, peers will admire you, then, only then you're able to get married and have kids, and then you can make them have a good education so you can continue the cycle, right? And as I grew up, I thought that if I was not an engineer, a doctor, or a lawyer, my life would be completely ruined. And I think a lot of us here can feel that, especially the kids here, or even like you have grown up going, yeah, that is what the hope that was being preached. You know what will save you? Getting a good education. That is your savior. And it becomes a driver. So you pour all your time and your effort and your strength in the hope of education, and that becomes how you make decisions in life, right? Maybe for some of us, as I've been there, done that, and we move to step number two. And for some of us here this morning, what are plans and ways to try to save ourselves, to give ourselves hope, is I'm going to do anything and everything to avoid suffering and just try to enjoy life. Now, there isn't anything wrong with trying to enjoy the life God has given us. But there's something different about it when we place our hope in that. And that's what we strive for. And every single decision that you try to make is based on, will this make my life easy or hard? Will this make my life more enjoyable or more painful? And how often are we going to go, you know, following Jesus, it's hard, so I will do the bare minimum. I will just jump from one vacation to the next and try to avoid as much suffering as possible. But a lot of us here know that as much suffering we try to avoid, there's only so much we can do. It's a hopeless situation. Or some of us here pour our energy, our strength, into relationships, thinking that's what will give me hope in life. That is what's going to sustain my life. That is what's going to make me feel like there's something, you know, that's going to fulfill me. And so we put our hope in relationships. If I can find a boyfriend or a girlfriend, that will give me hope. That will make me happy. That's the hope that will fulfill me. I've lost count of how many people have bought into that lie. And time again, I've seen people go, you know what, I know how to get to hope. Alright? It's not God and His way and His plans. I got the plan, right? I just need to find a good boyfriend or girlfriend. Or if I just had like friends, like meaningful relationships, that's the hope that I'm going to put myself in. Or maybe you get there and you go, you know what, this is the friendship I need. And you find that it's impossible for them to be your guide. You find it impossible for them to give you this hope. It leaves you frustrated. It leaves you upset. And we start placing all these things. We start thinking, we're trying to answer the question, what's going to bring me joy? What's going to make me happy? What's going to give me hope? And we start placing it everywhere except God Himself. Just like the temptation that Judah has. Maybe I can place my hope in Babylon. Maybe what I can do is plan it out perfectly so things will go my way. But it doesn't work that way, does it? And God is reminding us that our best plans, our ways, our solutions, that's not what's going to give you hope. That's not what's going to save you. It's me. So instead of investing your life in something that won't come out, like it's like you're investing your life hoping you hit the Powerball, instead of investing in something like that, He says, invest in me. Trust in me. I'm the one that offers hope. And so let's keep on looking. This is hopeless situation number two, it starts from verse 11. It says, the oracle concerning Duma. The one is calling to me from Seir. Watchman, what time of the night? Watchman, what time of the night? The watchman says, morning comes, and also the night. If you will inquire, come back again. That's even, if you thought the first 10 verses were confusing, I mean, this one's even more confusing. Like, what's going on? So this oracle switches off and starts talking about this country called Edom. Now, I'll give you a little background about this country, Edom. Edom, they kind of traced their roots back to Esau. And Esau was one of the sons of Abraham. So if you're tracking with me here, the Israelites, they will track their heritage back to this guy named Jacob, or Isaac, his son, and also Jacob, but Isaac, his son. And so Isaac and Esau were brothers from Abraham. So Edom is kind of like the cousin of Judah. They're related. Okay, they trace their heritage. They both can trace their heritage back to Abraham. But Edom, even though they know of God, you know, they're related to the Israelites, they do a lot of things that kind of like, they know God, but they don't really care for Him, right? They take advantage of opportunities, like whatever they think that will get them the best opportunity, they'll do it. They're not there to go like, okay, you know, I know that we both trace back to Abraham, like, I will also worship this God because I know of this God. They're kind of like, I know this God, but you know, they're really wishy-washy. And then a lot of times they actually just kind of stand against God because even though I know Him, I don't care for Him. And so this oracle says it's concerning Duma, you said. It's like, you read it's concerning Duma, not Edom. Duma is a play on words, or the name Edom. Duma means silence. This is a terrible example, but let me try to kind of paint you this, like what's going on. So you might think Edom, Duma, doesn't sound the same, but apparently in ancient Hebrew, it is a play on words. So, it's almost like if like a girl, let's call her Stephanie, right? And say Stephanie, people kind of, she's like a people pleaser, maybe people walk all over her. And so maybe if someone wants to write her a letter, they write, Dear, step on me. Right, because she gets walked all over. So, you know, the play on words here over here, right? So Isaiah's trying to be a little funny here, right? So he's going, Duma means silence. And so the question Edom's asking, like, when is that night going to end? When is this darkness going to stop? Because they find themselves in this midst of great darkness, right? They're not following God. They don't want anything to do with God. So they're finding themselves in this pretty hopeless situation that they find themselves in this metaphorical darkness. Like, man, this is rough times right now. When is it going to end? When is this going to end? And it's like they're like shaking this eight ball, right? Because the response is, I don't know. There's the morning. Morning comes. Also the night. Thanks. That's not very helpful, right? If you inquire, come back again, right? It's like shaking the eight ball and it comes out, you know, your future is hazy. Ask again later, right? It's kind of like the answer. It's like, all right, that doesn't really bring me any hope. There's not much to it. And so the hopeless situation number two here is that actually there's no words of hope for those who refuse God's way. Like, there's really no words of hope for people who consciously reject God. Like, what can you really say? There's not really anything to say if you're going to reject the God of hope. There's no other hope to be found. There's this guy I knew once in high school. Like, this guy, I saw him come to seem like really loved Jesus. I didn't know it, but like, he seemed like he really cared about Jesus. That's what it seemed. He wanted to be a missionary and devote his life to sharing the love of Jesus to people. He went and like learned a foreign language in college so he can go and share Jesus to people of different countries. But unfortunately, it seemed like he never experienced, fully experienced the love of Jesus himself. Because through a lot of tragic events, and they were tragic, a lot of things happened in his life, he decided one day to say, screw it. I'm not following God anymore. I don't care about this. I don't care about God. And he just kind of like went headfirst into just whatever he wanted to do. And just what it looked like, at least from the outside perspective, just looked like his life was just spiraling down. And just kind of like this glimmer of joy that I saw in his life kind of just slowly got sucked away. And he wrote a lot about it and things like that. And so I remember kind of just having a very candid conversation with him. And I sat down and I just kind of like, man, like, what happened? You know, like, what happened? And just we talked about it. And in the end, I felt really sad. Very hopeless. I didn't have any words of hope to give to him, right? I can't say to him, well, I hope your decision, like, you know, turns out okay for you. I hope that you deciding to no longer follow Jesus will work out for you. Like, I can't say that. I mean, what can I say, right? Like, I know that it won't turn out okay. I know this is not a good decision. All I could do is just kind of like, listen. You see, God is in the business of delivering you and me out of sin and despair. He's not in the business of turning your sin and your darkness to your Savior. God doesn't speak hope into the darkness because His goal is to drive out the darkness. He's speaking hope to call you out of the darkness into His light. So His goal is not to give us strength and hope in to be in the darkness, to ignore Him, to avoid Him, to do what we want to do. He's not going to give any hope into that. Like, continue to ignore me. I will give you hope in that. No, God's always been calling us out saying, this is a hopeless situation. Come to here. He's not going to speak hope if we're going to choose to refuse His way. There's no hope in that. So for us this morning, a lot of us might feel like, I don't hear God. I don't hear God. And maybe the challenge for us this morning is, maybe you don't hear Him because you're listening or waiting for the wrong answer. I'll give you some examples. God's not going to tell you, go ahead! Keep drowning yourself with pleasures and entertainment. You'll start feeling one day, you'll start feeling that will be a good decision. You'll be fulfilled by that. He's not going to go, yeah, keep on doing that. It'll turn around. I know that you keep on going, you feel like it's empty, keep on going. It'll work out for you. He's not going to tell us that. He's not going to go, you know what? You're absolutely right. It's absolutely your spouse's fault. Keep on blaming your spouse. It'll make your marriage better. Like, He's not going to say that. He's not going, you know what? Just continue to ignore having a relationship with your child. It's okay. One day, they'll just appreciate you for it, right? Keep on battering them down. It'll get better later on. He's not going to say that. He's not going, you know, don't worry. Go ahead and just skip church every once in a while. You know, go ahead and skip fellowship. Don't worry about building meaningful community and fellowship because, you know, your school is way more important right now. You know, like, your job is way more important right now. I understand. Yeah. Don't worry about that. Because, you know, my bride, the church, we can wait for you as you strive for success. He's not going to speak hope like that. You know, go ahead and find identity in what you do. I really care about what people think about you. I want you to do that. You know, maybe really just like invest so much in your talents and kind of push everybody out. That one day, that'll make you feel good about yourself. Find identity in what you can succeed in, not in me. No. Yeah, go ahead and do that. You know, go ahead every once in a while, go out, party up, go ahead and get drunk, enjoy yourself, enjoy your life, you're young once, go ahead and do that. I'm not worried about that, right? Like, that'll just make you feel good. Go ahead and do that. Don't worry about being generous with your time or money. You know, I'd rather you just worship my blessings than me. I'd rather you chase after your idols than really chase after me, because if that really makes you happy, I want to just speak hope into that. Like, I really hope that as you continue to chase after money and success and things, I think that's really going to work out for you, right? No. Because he knows those are hopeless situations. He knows those are dead ends. He's not going to speak into that. He's not going to be like, yeah, keep on doing that. It's like, I got no words to say about that. This, what can I say, right? He goes, here's the hope I offer you. Turn back to me. Follow Jesus. That's the hope I can give you. Let me speak hope into you. Let me speak value into you. You don't have to chase after those things. See, those are the hope that he whispers. But a lot of times we stand here and then we shake our fist at God because you're not giving me what I want. Why are you so silent? And why are you so quiet, God? Why? I really, really, really want this new car. And you just won't give it to me. You're the worst, God. Can't believe you won't say anything about that, right? I'm just going to go ahead. Like, I don't understand. Like, I pour my life and soul into striving for my own success. I'm a workaholic and my family is ruined. Why won't you fix that? God, why can't you just let me continue to strive after these things? I don't understand, God. Why does my child not love you, Jesus? But even though at home, constantly I tell them, all you need to do is study, because that's really your God, because that's the gospel I'm preaching at home. That is the gospel I'm preaching. If you study and get good grades, that is your hope and salvation. And all of a sudden, 16, 18, 20 years later, I'm going, my child doesn't want anything about God. Why? Because the gospel is like, I'm not here to kind of enable you. So I have no words to say. And so for us this morning, the question we really need to answer for ourselves, the question that we really need to answer is, do we really want to know God's answer for what's going on in my life? Like, do you really want that? Like, if God gives you the answer that you don't want to hear, will you take it? Will you accept it? Will you be like, all right, I'll humble myself and say, God, you're right. I need your help today. Or are you going to continue to just like go, God, you're not giving the friends I want. You're not giving the job I want. You're not giving the success I want. You're not giving me the spouse I want. You're not giving me the kids I want. You're not giving me these things I want. You're not giving me all the material success, so I don't want anything about you. God's going to be silent if we're going to ask Him to enable us to continue to trust ourselves, to continue to trust our things, to continue to trust our talents, to continue to trust our ways. His answer for that will be silence. Because He's not there to help us in that. But He'll be very loud and clear saying, abandon that and come after me. And there is the last hopeless situation. This hopeless situation number 3 is the oracle considering Arabia. In the thickets of Arabia, you will lodge in the caravans of the Dedanites. To the thirsty, bring water. Meet the fugitive with bread, O inhabitants of the land of Temah. For they have fled from the swords, from the drawn swords, from the bent bow, and from the press of battle. For thus the Lord said to me, within a year, according to the years of a hired worker, all the glory of Kedar will come to an end, and the remaining of the archers of the mighty men of the sons of Kedar will be few. For the Lord, the God of Israel, has spoken. So Arabia is just another play on words. It sounds like evening. So I'll spare you another of those examples. Just believe me here, right? And so he's saying that he's kind of painting this another, he's painting another picture. Like he goes, you know, your caravans of all your, you know, like, you know, the merchant caravans are going to be driven off the main road, off the, into the beaten path. He gives pictures of fugitives and people on the run because of war. Right? You see, like, the he goes, give the thirsty water, the fugitive bread, and he goes, they're fleeing from the swords, the drawn swords, the bent bows. Then he's just painting, these are people running because of war. And he gives, and then in the end, Isaiah gives what we call an interim fulfillment. Going, let me show you that this is real by giving you a short-term prophecy. And then in 703 BC, the Arabs, they join the rebellion with the Marduk Baladan, and then they end up being subdued by Sennacherib, King Sennacherib, the king of Assyria. And so we see what happens. They go ahead. They form these alliances. They go and attack Assyria, trusting their own strength, and they get destroyed. And so this picture that's being painted, like, you know, these people fleeing, like refugees of war, prisoners, running around, you know, people just fleeing from the battlefield, ends up happening. And this third hopeless situation is that there is no rest and there is no safety outside of God's kingdom. There's no rest and no safety outside of God's kingdom. Because this is the reality of living outside of God's kingdom. This is the consequence. You won't find safety within your sin. You're not supposed to find safety in your sin. This is what happens. And so, like what we're saying, so many times we hope God blesses our endeavors to pursue our own idols, and then when we get disappointed and frustrated at God when He won't meet our demands, He's going, This is what it looks like. This is what sin ends up. It's not all fun and games. It's not, you know, This is not this beautiful picture. It's not safety. It's this devastation. That's what it looks like. And God is trying to paint this picture, not like going, "Ha, look at you. You're out of my kingdom. You know, go ahead. You know, continue to ruin yourself." He's going, "This is what it looks like, and this is what I want you to avoid. This is what I want you to avoid. This. There's still time." In the early 2000s, there's a show on MTV called Pimp My Ride. I remember back then, like, you know, like, souping up your car was, like, really cool back in the day. I actually noticed, I started thinking about, like, man, like, actually, people don't really do that anymore. Like, people don't really, maybe it's California, but, like, you know, people just want to drive Priuses, you know, so that's how it is. And who wants to, like, soup up a Prius? Right? Like, what are you going to do, like, throw an extra battery pack in there? Like, you know, like, what are you supposed to do? And so, but back in the day, they people would love to, like, soup up their cars, right? I drove, if you remember, when I first got here, I drove a Honda Civic. I had a little coupe, right? So I switched out the back of my lights because it makes your car faster, right? Like, and so, people would, you know, like, put on body kits and they'll, like, kind of paint their cars, do all sorts of crazy things, and it was, like, so cool back in the day, right? I remember when I was in high school, that was, like, so cool, you know, it was, like, the Fast and the Furious, all that stuff. It was really, really cool. And so they had this TV show that really, like, catered to that. It's called Pimp My Ride, and the show is that they go ahead and take crappy cars, and then they give it a total makeover, like, Fast and the Furious style, right? So they take, like, you know, like, look at my, like, beat-up car, it's, like, it's just, like, a wreck. And they'll go and they'll, like, you know, they'll repaint it, they'll give you new seats, they'll put, like, TVs in there, and they'll just, like, go absolutely crazy, like, I'm going to put a popcorn machine in there, I'm going to put, like, a, you know, like, they have, like, cotton candy machine, we're going to put, like, this huge bass, and, you know, like, you know, the sound system in there, and all these, like, things, right? And so they do all these things, they're going to put these, like, giant rims, and then, you know, maybe, like, a body kit, then you drop it, and all this stuff. But then what we do, really, what it looks amazing on the outside, but they don't really, like, touch the inside of the car, like the under the hood stuff. So a lot of these cars, they were jacked up and they couldn't run because they had like a, you know, their engine wouldn't work, right? They had like a broken transmission or something like that. Like your muffler is like busted. And they're like even putting like a fake muffler because, but it's like it doesn't do anything, but it looks really good. And so what happens is like, you know, you get this car and there's like this like issues galore. And you can't really, it just, because nothing fits inside. Nothing is underneath the hood. I saw like Huffington Post wrote about like three people that like were on this show and what happened. And one of them, I mean, he also did a lot of like things himself. Like his car blew up. Like it's like, yeah, that doesn't sound really good, right? So what happens here is like, you know, no, doesn't matter what good you put on the outside, like how good you make it on the outside. Like if you have a bad engine, you're just in trouble. What these people needed wasn't a fancy exterior job. They needed a new car, right? Like they needed a new car. And so there's a saying for that. Right? If you put lipstick on a pig, still a pig. And so here we are. Many of us were trying to live outside of God's kingdom, and we're hoping that God or ourselves or anybody can make that into heaven. We're trying to live outside of God's kingdom, hoping that can be our heaven. We're hoping that outside of God's kingdom, I can somehow develop safety and the blessings of following God without really being in His kingdom. But it's just like these cars. Doesn't matter how fancy on the outside it looks. You don't need to make living outside of God's kingdom better. You need to be living in God's kingdom. That's the call for us. God's calling us into His kingdom. Because only within the walls of His kingdom is safety, love, joy, forgiveness, reconciliation, new hope, new life. And He opens that door to beckon us in. We are all refugees of war. And that war is against death, sin, and Satan. Sin takes no prisoner. And we are all like that. At one point or in time, either now, or we can go, yeah, I remember the days that I was outside of God's kingdom, striving for that. But His doors are open, and He's calling us in. Because He's painting this picture that life outside of my kingdom isn't that great. Come inside instead. He wants us to come inside, to be called His sons and daughters, to be accepted and loved unconditionally. But as we all probably know, this can only be found in His kingdom, not ours. That we have to be willing to leave that to come in to His kingdom. And He's allowed, and we're able to do that because of His Son. Because there was a point in time that there was no rest and safety outside of God's kingdom, but there was no ability to enter God's kingdom. But when Jesus came and died on the cross, on behalf of our sins, He came to purchase us. He came to die for our sins. He paid that consequence of sin. That cross became like a drawbridge, opening the door, going, you can now come in. That there is hope, love, forgiveness, reconciliation here. That Jesus came to live the life we couldn't live, to be able to enter His kingdom. He goes, I will live it for you. He came to die for the sins that we deserved when He said that, you know what, I'll pay that consequence, I'll pay that price so you can come in. And He rose again on the third day to say, it is done, it's accomplished, come on home. See, Isaiah gives three hopeless situations here. Not so we can sit and feel hopeless, but so we could be drawn to hope, to be drawn to Jesus. Because we know, as we study here, it's like, it has to change. It can't stay this way. We can't trust in our own solutions. We can't trust in our own ways to develop hope or to save ourselves. We can't wait and ask for God to speak hope into hopeless situations where we're going, if I'm going to reject God, He's not going to come and speak hope into that. And there is no rest and no safety outside of His kingdom. But there is inside His kingdom. So the question for us this morning is, do you want to come in through the gates? Do you want to enter a new life with Him? Because that's where our hope ultimately lies. And that is why He is our God of hope. Let us pray.